Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Gray Matters. I am Daddy Ray, Ray Bowerman, Daddy They. My pronouns are they, them. And it is great to have you guys back. I am actually out at the Kansas City Irish Fest today. I am playing with my band, Jump 2-3. We played last night, had a great set. Going to have another one today at 3 p.m. on the Whiskey stage. Y'all should come out and hear us if you're out there. And I'm also playing on Sunday with my friend Calvin Arsenio. We are on the Miller Lite stage at 3:30. So, because of all of this fun and shenaniganery, I am not in the studio. I'm recording this and sending this out to y'all today. So we are also going to replay an episode that got a lot of great feedback, a lot of positive response. It was my conversation, my chat, my hang with my friend and fellow therapist, Emily Foltz. It was fantastic. It was fun. It was informative. Hell, it was informative for me. So that's why I like surrounding myself with friends that teach me things. You know, those are the best friends, right? The friends you can learn stuff from. So we're going to cue that up for you guys and replay that episode today. And I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. See you next month as well, but enjoy the repeat episode of my chat with my friend and fellow therapist, Emily Foltz, where we talk about all kinds of things related to mental health and wellness. And, it was a great episode. It was a great chat. And, I have great friends. So take care, guys, and I will talk to you next month. Hey, you beautiful people out there. Oh my gosh, we're back. It is Gray Matters. I'm Daddy Ray. My pronouns are they, them. Welcome to another episode. How y'all doing? How y'all doing? Seriously. How are you all doing? Oh my God. Yeah, read between the lines there, y'all. So, today, you can laugh. It's all right. I'm gonna reveal the secret of who's in the studio with me today in just a second. You're already hearing her laugh. Oh, I'm so happy today, though. This is the bit of happiness. The ray of sunshine. Ooh, she's holding my hand in the studio with me today. Yes, because we all need some happiness, right? Megan, trusty Megan on the board today. How you doing, Megan?
Yes, I'm here. I'm good.
Be ready with that dump button, Megan, today. It may get used. You're like, I don't know where it is.
No, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay, Megan's like, I do know where it is. Clean that up. Yeah, because we're gonna try and keep it clean, y'all. But, you know, the dump button's there for a reason. I'm just saying, the way things are going. But that's one of the reasons why my friend is here. My friend. Friend extraordinaire. Therapist extraordinaire. Before she was a therapist, she was a human. Just like any therapist. We're humans first, right? Yeah, it's what we talk about. But without further ado, I want y'all to meet Emily Foltz. Some of y'all might know Emily. Some of you might work with Emily. Some of y'all might be Emily's friend. But I just want to thank Emily first and foremost for being here with me. I'm going to stop talking about you in the third person now. Just talk straight to you. So, hello, honey.
Hello.
I am so happy you're here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, so happy you're here.
I am very glad to be here with you.
Yeah. Now, remind me, have you been in the KKFI studios before?
No, this is my first time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. So, you're here. You're
yes,
on the
I am.
Radio.
So
as Rammstein would say, radio. Yes.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, we were talking about, like, what could we talk about today? And Emily and I get together with our other friend, Devaney, who's also an amazing human and an amazing therapist. And
this is true.
Yeah, was going to be with us today. Definitely invited her. She's out of town having some fun, which, go Devaney.
Yes.
Yes.
Well deserved.
Absolutely. So she can't be with us today, but definitely going to be on another episode for sure. We'll get the three of us going and...
and that'll be fun.
Oh, yes. Yes. We make it a habit to get the three of us together, talk about life, work. I mean, just pretty much anything that comes up. And,
yeah.
And so I thought, what a natural extension of what we do as friends, as therapists, just to sort of bring it on here for an hour and kind of talk about, you know, things that we may have sort of planned beforehand. We got our little notebooks here in front of us because Emily and I definitely vibe on the Hermione note-taking fun of you know, pens and...
Nerddom is the good place to be.
Yes,
right?
It is. And then also just kind of seeing what comes out, what we talk about. And that's sort of our vibe when we get together and we talk about things.
So, yeah. One of my favorite things to do is to stumble into Ray's office and say, so I have this strange idea. Let me run it past you. Or here's a half-baked thing that's been bouncing around my brain. And Ray will look at me and they'll say, okay, tell me about it.
They're like, lay it on me, friend.
And they're like, so I don't know about all of this, or, oh, give me more.
I would like to think it's more of the latter than the former. I mean, you know, that perpetual, like, information collecting thing I do.
I think one of my favorite parts about it, though, is the kickback, because I really like when a half-baked idea gets challenged, right? Because, you know, just agreeing isn't where it's at, right? You know, it's like a challenge is where ideas develop, right? You know, and so when you're in an echo chamber, that's where things get dangerous. And,
yes.
You know, I don't want someone who always says, oh, yes, in a sycophantic kind of a way. That's not what friendship is. Ooh. That's not what...
Put a quarter in the jar, sycophantic. That's a word, y'all.
But, you know, like where ideas actually develop and where growth occurs is when people come to us and they say, hey, I have something, but I don't know what it is yet. Can you help me with it? And somebody says, yes, I'm up for that challenge. And that is... beautiful.
Right?
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
And in finding that in a colleague / friend.
I'm so grateful I have you. Thank you so much for being in my life.
Same. Same, capital S, capital A, capital M, capital E, same. And Devaney, again, shout out to Devaney.
Yeah.
If she were here, we'd all be, you know.
So we'll just have a disgusting love fest and it'll just be beautiful.
Seriously. Okay. It's the way it goes. And... to echo what you said, that pushback, that kickback, I think is the word that you used. Same with you for me. You know, saying, hey, have you thought about this? And and that's how the trust gets built.
Yeah.
You know, knowing that whatever, excuse me, that I put out there, whether it's a me thing, it's, you know, case consultation, it's just whatever. If something pops up in that, you know, curly head of yours, if it's curly that day, of course.
Generally.
Right. Which I you know, dig in the curls, of course. You know, you're going to tell me.
Yeah.
You will never sugarcoat it. I mean, you know there's no reason to. And you're going to tell me why. And if you don't tell me why, I trust that there's a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just trust it.
So I love that you just said that. So this is one of those weird ideas that I had just recently, if you're game for it.
Yeah.
Where I was thinking,
I'm catching it.
I'm like, what are the important ingredients for a good therapist?
Yes.
You know, because I think a lot of people are looking for, you know, surrogate love in a therapist.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, personally, I think curiosity is what I'm looking for most in a good therapist.
Mm.
But maybe that's my own personal bias at play, because I don't know that I'm that warm, because I like to just challenge people. And so I'm like, well, maybe it's just because I'm a jerk, but I don't know. But then I also get a lot of feedback from people that I'm very soft, so, you know.
I would say that, in the spirit of, ethical disclosure levels, I will just say that my feedback about you as a therapist is that, yes, you are approachable, you are warm, you are a pleasure to work with. And that's not one of those, like, filler phrases, but that you are.
I'm like, I'm not fishing for that compliment, but thank you.
No. And I wouldn't, just give you hollow compliments.
Right. But I am curious. Yeah, I am very curious what you think about that,
yes.
About curiosity versus, and so we can get in the weeds about the difference between empathy and love, but from that client perspective versus that practitioner perspective on empathy and love.
And does it need to be empathy versus love?
Is there a differentiation?
Yeah. Well, and I think it goes to, as so much does, intent.
Do we need to define these terms?
Ooh. Well, it may be helpful.
Okay.
I mean, in a therapeutic sense.
Right.
So as therapists, when we're practicing empathy, what are we doing?
Right.
As opposed to, say, empathy with my partner, empathy with my sibling, empathy with someone I'm interacting with in a business transaction, a commercial sense.
Yeah.
So as a therapist to a patient, how am I practicing empathy?
Right. So from a clinical perspective, when I think of the term empathy, I'm thinking about, I guess, the practice of being emotionally in the space of someone else while they're in that space, right? So I can't feel exactly what you're feeling, but I can be in that feeling with you while you're having it.
Yes.
So I can't have your upset, but I can feel your upset with you.
Yes. And I would add to that. Actually, no, I'm not going to add yet because maybe you were going to say it. I don't want to prematurely jump in.
I welcome your feedback.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, and being willing to say, I don't and can't ever understand what that's like for you.
Yes.
I identify as such and such, and you identify as such and such, and those are two different things. So while our identities are different, what we do land on that is the same is the feeling of, say, grief.
Yeah.
Or loss.
Yes.
Or panic. Things like that. So the means or the process may be different, but the end is the same or very similar.
Yeah, I can only ever see the world through my lens. You can only ever see the world through your lens, but we can both have an experience with this thing that we all are going to have in common.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. In ASL, American Sign Language, one of the best sign that I've seen is actually a combination of two signs for empathy is feel same. And so that gets as close to what I think, empathy, like what we're saying is that, that idea that it's like the, what got you there might not be the same. It might, but and you never know. You
sure.
can't matrix yourself into the back of someone's head and sort of quantify or qualify that, but it's that feeling of going, yes, I'm going to hold that space with you or be in that space with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I am going to push pause on our lovely discussion here with Emily Foltz, my friend and fellow therapist, and we're going to take a quick station break. Hey, y'all. You are back with Daddy Ray. My pronouns are they, them. This is Gray Matters, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm here with my friend and fellow therapist, Emily Foltz.
Hello.
Yay. And I wanted to let y'all know, if you want to call in or send us a question, I think you can do that via the website, but we would love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, please call in. The number here at the studio is 816-931-5534. And I'm one of those people that if I'm listening and I'm like, what was that number again? I'm going to repeat it a couple times just to make sure y'all got it. It is 816-931-5534. And again, it is 816-931-5534. So give us a call, and if you have any questions along the lines of stuff we're talking about, stuff like that. You got two therapists sitting here. Granted, we are not going to dispense any clinical advice. Yeah, no therapizing, no clinical advice, things like that. However, we are both therapists. We both have websites. That information, I do believe, is in my bio on the website. So if you do want to find me, you can find me. Emily Foltz, her practice is under her name. My practice is under Gen X Therapy, G-E-N-E-X, Therapeutic Solutions. So just out of curiosity, if you wanted to find us, that's how you find us. And now, back to what we were talking about. You had mentioned sort of finding those qualities in a therapist or things that you wanted to see. Curiosity was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then you were talking about empathy versus love or empathy and love and holding that space with your patient and what that empathy looked like.
And curious about, or I'm thinking about what makes good therapy happen or what the ingredients are for a good therapist, mm-hmm. or for good therapy, mm-hmm. I was thinking about, asking good questions, allowing the process to take place, all of those very therapeutic, buzzwordy kind of things, mm-hmm. Where my little brain settled was on curiosity. And I was like, I think that's, to me, that feels like the juicy place, because it's mm-hmm. that desire to want to know about someone else's experience and someone else's perspective, and kind of trying to remind yourself that you don't have necessarily the solutions mm-hmm. or the magic answer or the power to fix any of that stuff, and having the reminder that maybe it's the practice of asking the question, seeking out that perspective, and maybe that's really what somebody else is needing more so is that own kind of perspective and understanding for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. That reminds me of something I'll say sometimes to people. It's like, you're going to teach me about you. I'm not really here to give you any information about yourself, because you know you better than I do. You're going to teach me about you, and you're going to hand me information. My job, if I'm doing it accurately or efficiently, hopefully, is to take that information and sort of shift it around and, and then hand it back to you, kind of maybe at a different angle or in a different configuration, and say, have you considered this?
Yeah.
And then you might go, ugh.
Yeah.
That's uncomfortable, but I didn't consider that. Or, no, that's not accurate. That's not a good fit. And then you hand it back to me, and I go, okay, well, how about this?
Right.
And then we kind of go back and forth. And then as that happens, you'll maybe fill in a piece here and there. It may, prompt you to say, oh, I just remembered something. And then you'll give me more pieces, which then will fill out that picture.
Right.
And then we continue in that exchange. And so under that umbrella of curiosity, like you're saying, getting to know that person and taking what they're giving, using that information and becoming that sort of puzzle putter together. Like that word.
Putter together.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe we should go print off some new business cards.
Yeah. That's going to be
a new name.
My new title. And I need another jar words that just are wow.
I'm going to change my practice name. To puzzle putter together. I'm going to contact my building manager and just say, I'm going to need a new name tag outside of my door.
Oh my God.
Okay. Emily Foltz, puzzle putter together, please.
Yep. And that's going to get put on a shirt at some point, I think, for the show. It's going to happen. I'm going to hear about that later.
I like puzzle putter together.
Megan likes it, too.
That's what we do.
Do you like it, Megan?
Oh, yeah. I think it's quite effective. Yes.
This is catchy.
Yes, it is.
Oh, Lord. So back to curiosity. I agree. I mean, that's one of the reasons I got into this. Would you say for you as a therapist, it's one of the reasons that sort of propelled you towards being a therapist? Is you were curious about people? And
I think so.
Okay.
I used to work in marketing and like advertising, public relations.
Okay.
And have I told you this? Do you know this?
Maybe.
Backstory?
Maybe in our backstory, our former lives.
Or whatever. Yeah, my former life.
Yeah, yeah. Interpreters and marketers of things.
Yeah. So I worked for the internal advertising department of a bank in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just prior to and at the beginning of the financial collapse. And
are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I knew the time frame.
Yeah. And that didn't have anything to do with my career change. It just was coincidental timing. Mm. I have a knack for picking out controversial careers right at the time that they become controversial, right? You know, so it's like I got into like advertising banks right at the time of like the you know, the financial collapse. Right. And then I became a counselor. And then immediately I was like, I want to go into gender therapy. That seems to be like exactly the place for me. Yeah. And then Caitlyn Jenner came out like the year after I began doing what I do. Yeah. I was like, oh, apparently I just get myself into like,
well, you know,
these things, you know. So
yeah, no.
Yeah, but it was fine. What I noticed when I was in advertising, I noticed like two or three different things that kind of like led me in this direction. First was shortly after graduating with my bachelor's degree, I realized that I wasn't happy doing what I was doing and that there's a big difference between being good at something and enjoying something. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so this will earn me a living, but it sure sucks.
And how many of y'all out there listening right now can relate?
Yeah. So I plugged away at it for a while, and it was very unrewarding.
Okay.
And so, you know, I kind of like switched jobs a couple of times, then wound up at this bank and was working there, really enjoyed the people I was working with, but hated a lot of the work I was doing, and realized I was good at keeping track of things and was good at problem solving, but I always needed to understand why we were doing the things that we were doing, and really hated shallow explanations, and really enjoyed the relationship building aspects of the work we were doing, and really hated all of the rest of it. I really liked the creativity aspects of it, really hated all of the rest of it. And I was like, okay. And like from the first year I was doing my work, I was like, I wonder if I went back to school and got a counseling degree, if that would be a good thing for me. You know, and then eventually like the opportunity kind of arose. I was like, oh, let's just lean into this really hard.
Yep.
I was like, let's just grab this opportunity and follow it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you on that.
Yeah. So when the opportunity was there, I was like, I am chasing this opportunity with absolutely everything I've got.
Yeah cool.
But yeah, so it was just, but so I think it was maybe a little bit the curiosity, but it was also I just like people.
Yeah,
I just really like people.
It's kind of like we were talking about last night.
Yeah. That's
like looking at me and saying hi to people.
Yeah, I just really like people. Sometimes I get discouraged by humanity also, you know, because like...
Well, you know.
The world.
The world. Womp womp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to be dismissive. Or
I know. Every so often when I get really frustrated or if I'm having like a particularly like misanthropic moment, my husband, like I'll say something like, oh, but I just really love people. I just really like people. And my husband will say to me, he'll be like, do you?
But do you?
Yeah, and I'm like, well, yeah. And like my bleeding heart splits open.
Yeah. You know? It's like, yeah, I do. Gosh darn
it. I'm like,
but
can't you tell?
Yeah.
You know, puppy dog eyes.
Yeah, I know. And it's, you know, it's times like that. It's like two things can be true at once.
I'm complicated.
Arg. Yeah, just like everyone is.
Yeah.
Well, along those lines, to sort of circle back to that idea of like being a good therapist or what you look for in a therapist. You were talking about curiosity. What else would you say that you, you know, would look for or that you value in a therapist?
I mean, I think those are the really big ingredients, but I mean, I think certainly, pardon me.
That was me last month. Yeah. Cough all you want.
Well, no, I mean, seriously. I think that the training has to be there. You have to have competency.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Right? Yeah. I mean, competency has to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. You cannot have... I'm sorry. Like,
oh, don't be.
Like, no, like this is going to be, I feel like this is about to be a soapbox or something. Like, there's nothing that gets me going like an incompetent practitioner. And I'm sure that I have my moments when I'm out of my depth. I know that I have my moments when I'm out of my depth or when I have an off day. If you don't know what you're doing, get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, or get the training, get the help. Don't get out. Get the training.
Mm-hmm.
Because your work is needed and your work is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We need people in the field. We need qualified practitioners. Get the training. Get the help.
Mm-hmm.
Because your work is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, please know what you're doing. Please know that you... Yeah. Well, and please know that your missteps have consequences.
Yes. We'll be able to listen across. Kind of like, you know... And if I remember correctly, you sang in a choir and you have musical background and all that kind of stuff. You know, the concept of, and for anyone in the, you know, listening audience that isn't a musician, it's the idea of listening across when you're playing or singing or whatever, performing, listening to the people next to you, in front of you, just whatever, that general sense of not, it's not just your part, you know, you're part of an ensemble, so you listen across.
Yeah.
As a therapist, you know, I like to think that's what I do with you and Devaney, you know, that's what I do with other people in a cohort or, you know, peers, you listen across. And if you're not doing that, at least with a couple people, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that listening skill set is really important, mm-hmm. you know, so when you're talking about what else does it take, so like that training piece is really important, that competency piece is really important, but mm-hmm. listening, right, listening as a skill set, I think is really undervalued, like, I guess, in
listening.
Society and culture, but like in therapy, I think within therapists, it's well understood and hopefully like well talked about, but to me, and I guess like broadly, maybe this is something that's like a skill set the general public might not be as aware of, you mm-hmm. know, or that isn't talked about as clearly. And so listening as a skill set, I think, is really, really important. And so there's these two kinds of listening that I value very highly, and I'm really grateful for having been taught as a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this one kind of listening that I was trained in through narrative therapy, which is like a specific kind of therapeutic practice that I trained in through a couple of different training opportunities I kind of signed up for in school and then after school through additional training. And so there's this one concept that's called the absent but implicit, which is this kind of beautiful term.
Mm-hmm.
And so the absent but implicit is this concept that is, if somebody is telling me something and they believe this to be true, you know, I first of all have to meet my client where they are
yes.
and accept that what they are saying is true to them, that is truth in their world.
Yep.
I'm not going to challenge that truth. Yep. That is...
And they're the expert of their own experience.
Yes.
Yes.
That's reality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Reality is relative to the individual as they're experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. You know, there are times when it's important to challenge our realities because we're all constructing them actively as we're living our lives.
Right.
And so sometimes my reality is going to conflict with your reality.
Right.
It's important to call those moments into question
yes.
and to make sure that we're not living in damaging or false or dangerous realities.
Right.
Right. So that's a whole different conversation.
Right.
That's a whole other thing. Okay. Sorry.
Don't be.
Well, but so bringing it back to this idea of the absent but implicit is, okay, so for this thing to be true that you've just told me, there are other truths that must also be happening,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm engaging in a special kind of listening. You've just told me something, but for this thing to be happening, mm-hmm. there are other things that are also happening that haven't been spoken.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. So that's part of listening in therapy. Mm-hmm. And so that takes a special kind of attention, right? I have to be very present with you in this moment to hear not only what you're saying, but also what you're not saying.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that's, and I don't think people, you know, generally understand that kind of attentive listening.
Yeah.
But that is kind of like a special, I don't know, it's like the therapeutic listening that's
it is
different than general public listening.
Yes. Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up. Oh, I'm just like my little geek heart, therapeutic geek heart. It's just like going, wee!
Learning that was really hard for me because I'm a talker, you know?
That's another reason I'm geeking out right now is because I so relate with you on that.
Yeah.
But go ahead to that the second kind of listening, and then I was going to like...
Well, and so I guess that kind of ties in with like that double listening, which is, I think, very similar to it, which is, you know, it's like listening to what's being spoken, but what's also not being spoken. Mm-hmm. And like, and then also listening to the body cues and, you know, the...
Mm-hmm. The nonverbal.
Yeah, all of the nonverbal stuff. Mm-hmm. And then also remembering back to past content of past conversations,
yes.
And like the unspoken values that are present in a person's, mm-hmm. You know, conversations and, mm-hmm. you know, all of that.
No, I was going to say, and when you're talking about nonverbals, if you're getting into any kind of, you know, somatic psychotherapy, in tying into that, you know, then taking it a step further and saying, how is this informing, you know, somatic soma meaning body, it's Latin for body, you know, what are you feeling? Literally, what are you feeling? You know, getting out of your head and into your body. How is this informing, you know, as you're sitting there right now? Are you feeling anything in particular in a part of your body and blah, blah, blah? And that is a whole other, you know, conversation, types of somatic psychotherapy. But to go back to what you're saying, my head, and as my brain does, it's going to like 5-15, a bunch of different things right now that you said that I'm just like, so stoked that you're bringing these things up. The main thing I'm just relating really hard to you about right now is just that being a talker, and if you can't tell, and that's been such a challenge for me as a therapist, is to just shut up. And if any of my patients are listening right now, yes, feel free to laugh. You have earned the right. Because, as a close friend of mine reminded me several months ago, we were talking, and he said, you know, let the silence do the heavy lifting. And he was always very good at that. He's still very good at that. He's taught in the K-12 school system for years and has been an administrator, and he's very good at that. He has patience that I will never have, or a quality of patience that I will never have. And so he's very good at that. And when he said that to me, because it came from him, but also, you know, what he said, it comes up at times when I'm in a session and I'm reminded of that.
Yes.
And so I sit back, even though I literally can physically feel the words welling up in my throat, and I stop and I think
that's something we need to put on our list of like what makes a good therapist, right? You know, that patience, that respect for silence, that presence in the moment.
Good
respect
golly.
For silence. Respect for silence. Mm. That patience.
Mm. Audience, I am writing these things down actually as Emily and I are talking about them because just, you know, as you can tell, Emily is full of nuggets of wisdom. And yeah, you know, you are. And I'm just saying it. You know, when we get to talking, there's just stuff that comes out that I'm like, I just want to remember that. It's just,
this is me looking away
good stuff
from Ray's bologna there.
Bologna's delicious, y'all.
The most processed of meats.
So is Braunschweiger. And some of y'all are like, what's that? Some of y'all are like, oh, bleh. And some of y'all are like, yeah, delicious.
I'll just smile and nod.
You're like,
okay.
Ew. How are we doing on time, Megan?
We are absolutely fine.
Okay.
You guys are doing great.
All right. Just want to look over at you. Just, you know, took a heavy detour there to talk about processed salty meats. I don't know.
Thank you for riffing on this very strange thought that I just, you know, sorry about that. But, I mean, not to apologize, but,
you know. You know, I zigzag, you know, Bologna and Braunschweiger and therapy and absent but implicit listening. And those just all go hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I missing any important ingredients? Do you think there are other important ingredients? I'm sure that we are, but you know.
Well, I hope that I don't have too much bologna in my therapy. I mean, in a metaphoric sense. Womp womp
womp. It's when I like to remind myself that, you know, it's the two things I always try to remind myself to bring myself comfort when I have doubts.
Mm.
You know. And so the two things I always try to bring myself back to are, number one, that as long as you've got yourself in a good place in terms of, like, your own therapeutic, like, competence and training in your theory, and you're bringing yourself back to your core and you know what you're doing, then you're at least not doing poorly, right? So it's like, I'm operating from a place of competency, that's good. And then step number two, that the most important ingredient for success in therapy is the relationship between client and therapist.
Yes.
And that's the most important ingredient for success. So as long as we are, like, gelling therapeutically, that's where the magic happens. So it's like, okay, I have a plan for what we're doing together, and I've got rapport with my client. We're going to work through the things we need to work through. Right?
Oh, Megan has a question.
You were asking about a few other possible skills for strong therapists. What about the ability to formulate questions? I'm not really very good at that. I tend to just give my opinion. I would never be a good therapist. But I'm thinking, when I've had therapy, how skilled my therapists have been in formulating those questions that made me think but did not judge me.
So I feel like those are two different qualities.
Yeah. That it's like a Venn diagram there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, those can overlap, but they don't necessarily have to.
Okay, so the two qualities I heard were the non-judgment and the phraseology.
And yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, so the question forming as, like, one distinct skill set, and then the non-judgmental stance as a second skill set. And, I mean, I think I'm right there with you, that those are both very important qualities.
Because you can have one and definitely not the other.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully you've got at least one of those. I hope that you've got both. You know, I think both of those are very important for therapists.
I hope I have both. I know you have both.
Thank you. So this was something that was really cool in my program. I had a professor, Dr. John Cook, who was fantastic. And then this sounds very creepy, but he was the professor who hooded me at my hooding ceremony.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, cause it's like you get, like, a hood when you get your master's degree. But it sounds, like, so very clannish. Like, I feel uncomfortable about, like, having a hood, you know, like, it always has, like, a little bit of, like, a white supremacist, like, feel to me when I think about it. I went to a hooding ceremony. Also, I took, like my prom date in high school was a person of color. And when I posted my hooding ceremony on Facebook, like, he made a joke about, like, my prom date got hooded. And he was like, I don't know how I feel about this. And it was, like, this whole running joke.
You know, to be completely honest, I didn't even know that that's what it was called.
And then I had all sorts of feelings about, like, having earned a master degree and, like, all of this stuff. And I just got, like, really uncomfortable with the whole thing. Anyway, I know I veered way off.
That's okay. That's why I'm squirming in my chair right now.
I know. Yeah. So it made me very uncomfortable in a lot of ways, but it was, you know, anyway.
Yeesh.
So Dr. Cook, one of the things that was really, really cool about him was on Saturday mornings in the program, it was a night program that my counseling program was, on Saturday mornings, he invited whoever was interested to a free extracurricular, like, gathering. Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, question writing 101. And everybody just sat around this big table in the counseling department offices. And he was like, please come and join me. And we'll, you know, like, eat donuts and drink coffee and write questions together. Mm-hmm. And everyone would just sit around the table and he'd be like, okay, let's throw out a hypothetical situation. And then everybody just, you know, and so he would put out a case study and he would say, here's what somebody just said to you in an appointment. Mm-hmm. What question would you ask? And everybody in the room would write down on a note card the question that they would ask. Mm-hmm. And then we would all take turns reading them out loud to each other. Mm. And then we would give each other feedback on the question that we just asked. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most helpful things that I did in grad school.
That's really cool.
It was really cool.
I'm assuming it included things like, you know, closed-ended questions, open-ended questions.
Oh, absolutely. And then we would provide each other critiques
things
on
like
it.
That, yes.
Yeah.
That made me think of something, actually, too. For me in grad school, one of the things that stuck early on, and I had this professor three times, and she said, and she was a person of color, and she said, specifically because it can be taken, this worked into the idea or the concept of historical trauma that she was teaching at the time in one of the classes I took from her, talking about things too that she personally and also encouraged us to avoid is to literally never, and she doesn't, ask a why question. Mm. Because if anything is going to make someone feel interrogated,
yeah,
it's asking a why question. And so we would practice rewording, reframing, rephrasing questions to get to, and you know, a lot of times they're the open-ended questions. Open-ended questions, for anyone who doesn't know, are usually who, what, where, when, why, how questions. Mm. They're questions that are going to be answered with a longer answer, basically anything other than a yes or no. A closed-ended question can be answered with yes or no. And so we would practice rephrasing questions that, you know, you might start out saying, you know, why do you think you did that? Or why did you go there? And then taking out the why. And, you know, what reasons do you think you might have had for doing that? You know, practicing rephrasing those so you're eliminating the word why.
That's such a good reminder.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually going to press pause again, and we're going to take another short little station break. Emily, you are amazing, and I'm loving this discussion. Hopefully our listeners are as well. I'm Daddy Ray. My pronouns are they, them, and you guys are listening to Gray Matters. And this is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Hello, y'all. We are back. This is Gray Matters. I'm Daddy Ray. Pronouns they, them. And yes, I keep repeating that because it's important.
It is very important.
And this is KKFI. Wait, let me get it right again. It's 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm still new enough that I have to practice that. And very specific about how you say it. So practice makes perfect, right? Or practice makes better.
I kind of love that came on the tail of you, like, reminding people of your pronouns, because it's kind of like a beautiful, like, complimentary practice, right? Where it's like, hey, guess what? I'm going to remind you of my pronouns because those matter. And also I'm rehearsing saying what I'm supposed to say as part of my responsibilities here as a host, because that matters.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that.
I just, you know,
well, love it. Love it. Oh my gosh. Megan, you know, I really liked that question you asked. Do you have any other questions?
Well, keep talking.
You're full of good questions. Okay.
I just love being here. I just find this fascinating. And I'm like, I don't think I need therapy, but I like you both so much that maybe I just pay you for a couple of sessions just to sit down and talk.
No, Megan, you do not pay your friends.
And there's our next topic. Your therapist is not your friends, and your friends are not your therapist.
No.
Full stop. Just the way that goes. Boundaries.
Boundaries.
We did talk about that as a potential thing to talk about today, which is a whole other, you know, show we could get into about, you know, transference, counter-transference, projection, things that, you know, as therapists, we need to be aware of and vigilant. And if we find ourselves sort of like treading in those waters, to make sure that we untread in those waters, or if we are and we have, check in with our peers.
Right.
You know, like if I felt like I was doing that, check in with Emily and with Devaney and say, hey, I did this.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it happens, that's the thing. And we're not talking about, you know, like the automatic, obvious, egregious ones, like having sex with your clients.
I mean, creepy.
Which, you know, yes, it happens sometimes. And that's why it's a no-no. You know, that's why it's codified in.
Well, and the rules, I say creepy because it's an abuse of power.
Right, exactly.
It's an egregious abuse of power.
Yes.
I've got very strong feelings about this.
Yes.
Right? Because
absolutely.
You've got... So there's like that term that, again, is probably something that we're very familiar with, but maybe isn't a general public term, that's called undue power.
Mm-hmm.
Where just by the nature of the relationship, there's an imbalance of power between two people.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's like you walk into a therapeutic relationship, your therapist has power over you.
Yes.
Because of the relationship.
Yes.
So any kind of like sexual activity that takes place in that relationship is imbalanced and it's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Like full stop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just not right. So,
right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And people think, you know, sometimes that, you know, it that it's that obvious or whatever, but it's like it can be, and I hesitate to draw this comparison, but, and I hate the term microaggression because, as my friend Zach says, no aggression is micro. And that's a whole other show we could do, but, you know, the term microaggression came about for a reason, and he offers a really good argument as to why microaggressions are not micro. But along those lines, you know, saying, you know, as a microaggression, to say it's not egregious and in your face and dialed up to, you know, 11, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like having sex with your clients, right? And there are so many other abuses of power that can happen between a therapist and a patient that may not even be on someone's radar, you know, that are boundary violations. And sometimes they happen and you're not even aware of them.
Yes.
And in catching them, you know, go, oh, man. Like, what was that?
Right.
And I know I'm being purposefully vague just because, again, this is a larger topic that merits discussion, but we could really get into it. It's just sort of another time and thing.
Right.
What would you like to say
about
that?
Well, so, you know, it's like the being a good therapist thing, you know. So, yes, therapy, you know, being curious, practicing empathy, you know, all of these ideas that we've, you know, talked about so far, but then I'm also thinking about making sure that you're keeping yourself in check and that you're practicing your own kinds of self-care and that you're not projecting your needs on the client, that you're, you know, that you're keeping who you are in bounds, you know, so that you're not making your client's issues about you.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's like, you know, and so that's a whole other conversation like you're talking about, but it's that thing that you've got to keep aware of. And so like that boundary practice, you know, so it's not always about what is happening. Like, I think it's very important to maintain those healthy boundaries where it's like, I have to keep me over here because this isn't my time. This is my client's time.
So I'm going to take a risk right now.
Okay.
And hopefully you'll go with me.
Okay.
And this is me being risky on my dime.
Okay. All right.
So I will say that I use personal disclosure when I feel like it's therapeutically sound.
Sure.
And in having done that, there are times where something has happened. Clients going through a particularly tough time, and I will use, you know, personal disclosure. And there have been times where it has been it has hit so hard that they're crying and I'm crying too.
Ah, uh-huh.
So we're in it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I let myself go there.
Sure.
I let myself cry.
Sure.
Like, I let them see that. And at times, again, I won't go into the weeds necessarily, but I tell them why.
Yeah.
I really want to know, because I know, like, yeah, I said at the beginning of the show, I know you will tell me the truth, and I'm prepared to hear it. Like, I'm, yeah, prepared for people listening to this show to hear you give me feedback, even if it's like, I don't know about that, Ray. Like,
right.
And ask me questions about it. Like, I think this is a good thought experiment, and I'm willing to put myself out there right now.
Right.
So, like, what feedback would you give me, or what questions would you, as another therapist, ask me about that?
So, I mean, I would be curious about the use of emotion as a therapeutic tool.
Mm.
That's where I go. Because I'm not... I mean, depending on your relationship with me and who you are,
mm-hmm,
that's my preface for this. I'm not an easy crier. In certain contexts, I'm an easy crier, right?
In these, I was. I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
Let's, yeah, say it that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I mean, so there are some contexts and there are some people with whom I'm a very easy crier.
Okay.
And then in all other contexts, I'm dry as a bone.
Okay.
Right? And so it's very rare that in a therapeutic setting you would get me to cry, even if I'm like really present with somebody, even if they've just closed something to me that's like really horrific. And I think there's been times when it would have been very helpful, mm-hmm, for me to express like that kind of emotionality with a person, and I haven't been able to do that,
mm-hmm,
you know, just because that's not my therapeutic persona,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yep,
and that's not because I'm not genuinely there with them, but like that's just not the way my tear ducts are wired.
Right.
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 You know, in my personal life with with various people,
right,
like that's not the same story. You know, it's like you get me in front of like the right movie and like the waterworks are flowing,
right,
you know,
right,
get me in front of the right commercial and like my, you know, my tears are going. But, you know, but that's just me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that it could be a, depending on how it's being used, I think that could be a very beautiful opportunity to model an expression of emotional regulation and dysregulation, saying,
ooh,
this is the way that I experience emotions, and this is the way that I bring myself back into regulation after having gone there. But is that something that you're able to do therapeutically, or is that something that is overtaking, you know, like that therapeutic moment? Like, so are you able to still be present enough with your client to demonstrate that process?
And I feel like I was. And without, you know, can't go into the weeds, you know, but the reason for these particular ones that I'm thinking of, there was a demonstrative aspect of it to say, this is not something that has come easy for me over time because of my upbringing as well.
Yeah.
You know, and yet, here. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, you know, and of course I can't fill out the picture for you because,
of
stuff. So that's what I'm sitting here going, what can I say? What can I say? But so, I think what I'm trying to, say is I agree with you, and under the circumstances, I would like to say that that's what I feel like I did and why I did it.
It felt like the right choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though I couldn't help it and it was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So that is to say that I chose to stay in the room and cry, as opposed to I need to excuse myself,
mm,
and leave and come back, which I've never actually done before.
Can I also say that's like so somatic?
Right.
Right.
It is. That's, and maybe, oh, I didn't even think about that. Being someone who really puts a lot of, like, you know, value on somatic, you know, somatic approach to psychotherapy, maybe that's why I'm having a moment where what Emily just said, like, made me think maybe that's why I chose to stay and, like, process through that way. With the person. Okay. Okay, that's going to have some thinky thoughts later. Very interesting.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? We have about 3 minutes left. What do you think?
I was like,
2 minutes left.
If this is something you, if you're doing supervision, that might be something that's worth talking about with supervision.
For my clinical supervision.
Yeah.
Totes. Yeah. Excellent. Oh wow. Oh, this is such a great topic. And actually, it's meaty. It's like I'm going to chew on this. I'm going to talk about this with maybe with you later or supervisor for sure. But yeah, very cool. So I'm going to wrap this up. This is definitely not going to be the last time you're going to be in here with me. I am telling you what.
Hey, Ray. I love you.
Hey, Emily. I love you, too.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sib. Thanks for being here. Emily Foltz, ladies and gentle thems, I really appreciate
folks
you.
Folks of all folks.
That's right. That's right. Thank you guys for listening today. This has been Gray Matters. I'm Daddy Ray. Pronouns are they, them. And as always, just short and sweet today, my little I love you and I miss you. You know who you are. You know I'm always talking to you. Not sure if you're listening to this show today, but I super love you and I super miss you. And I think you need to play that one particular song for me that you know I really, really, really like on the banjo, Crickets. I think that would be great. So I love you and I miss you. And hopefully I will talk to you soon. And the rest of y'all, have a fantastic month. And I will see you next month on Gray Matters.